Hi everyone, we're going to begin in a minute. Just give us a few minutes. Hi everyone, good evening. We'll just wait another few seconds. There we go, Yolanda's just coming back. There we go. Just give us 30 seconds here. Okay. All right. Ilana, can you hear me okay there? You wanna, yeah? All good? You're muted, but you can unmute yourself. There we go.
Yes, excellent. I can hear you.
Okay, fine. We can hear you. Brilliant. Okay, good evening, everyone, and welcome to this really exciting episode of The Schmooze. For those of you who have joined for the first time and perhaps don't know who I am, my name is Levi Garari. I work at Bina. My father's Rabbi Garari. He's the director of Bina, which is all about adult Jewish education, lectures, shiurim, all those type of things. And one of the things we've started doing is something called the Schmooze, which is just an opportunity to schmooze, to talk a little bit more in a casual way, to have a little bit of a conversation. Usually it's just my father and I, but tonight we have a very special guest, Ilana Kaplan. Ilana Kaplan is a member of Bina. She technically loves Bina, she just doesn't live in Australia, that's the only problem. But she technically still comes to Bina. It's so good to have her here with us. Ilana works at a place called Boys Town Jerusalem, which you're all here tonight to hear about, a fascinating place, which takes youth from disadvantaged homes and works with them, and I'll let her describe exactly what it is. I'll just the format of tonight is I'll pose some questions, we'll have a conversation. My father is with us as well, who has a background in education, of course, in Torah, in Jewish thought, so we'll hear his perspective as well as I'm sure my father has some questions for Ilana as well. I'm sure he'll throw that in. So we'll make this, and of course, if anyone has a question, please don't hesitate to post it in the chat box and I'll read it out and get involved and make this interactive. So Ilana, let's start from the beginning. So if you can just describe briefly, what is Boys Town Jerusalem? What's the history? What's the origin? What's its mission statement?
Okay, so firstly, it was established in 1948. Rabbi Alexander Lynchner sent Israel from America to set up a school and a home for boys from the Holocaust, survivors, orphans, as well as for a school for boys, families coming in from Middle Eastern countries. And the idea was to give them a home and also to give them a vocation so they wouldn't be a burden on society. And that's still the philosophy today. While there's I mean, there are actually orphans. Most of the kids are orphans because in Israel, a child is considered an orphan if he's only has one parent. So the vast majority of our children today actually are orphans. But even so, it's for children from disadvantaged backgrounds, and it's to give them a future so that the world is open to them, you know, that they have skills specifically, and a life, and that they can move on and break out of their cycle, of their family cycle of poverty. In most cases, that's the issue.
So what type of backgrounds, if you just sort of expound that a little bit, like what type of homes are we talking about?
Well, it varies. I mean, it might not, most of them are poverty stricken, and COVID has just exacerbated to levels that are just unimaginable. But they're not all necessarily from such poverty stricken homes. They might be kids that have been thrown out of every institution for whatever reason. We don't take kids who are on substance abuse because we actually can't, we don't have the facilities to help them. But they might have other disadvantages. There might be sickness in the home a lot of the time. Actually, a lot of them also do have sickness in the home, whether it's the parent or the children or whatever. And most of the kids get referred through social services. So there's some sort of disadvantage that they've had that they're sent to us.
And what age does it start from?
It starts from year seven. So, well, what we call year seven, so in Australia. So they're about 12, 13. Usually they're having their bar mitzvah around when they come.
How many children do you actually have now?
At the moment, we've got over 900. I'm not quite certain. Well, the school's just finished for the year. So we did lose kids. I'll admit we did lose kids over the because of COVID. The homeschooling, the Zoom sessions, for some of the kids, they just didn't relate to it, and some of the kids just didn't come back. I don't know the numbers, to be honest, how many. There weren't a huge amount. We only can take about 1,000 kids because we've got facilities for more. And in the past, they did have more than 1,000 kids, but the government doesn't allow, the municipality doesn't allow schools to reach a certain amount. They cap the numbers in each school because otherwise everyone wants to come to Boys Town. Otherwise we'd be overrun with kids and other schools would have to close down. So they like to keep the numbers at a minimum. I think we're only allowed 3 classes of 30 in year 7. The intake is very limited for us.
So you mentioned that you don't take kids who are on substance abuse. What is the other criteria sort of for acceptance into the school? So if someone, for example, I don't know, has a criminal record or something, or sort of
I don't know if we've ever had taken a kid with a criminal record. I can't imagine that we wouldn't. I would think that we absolutely would. That's not a reason not to take the child. We have a huge, people wanting to come to the school. Sorry, my English isn't, not that my Hebrew is great, but people applying for the school, applications, that's the word I'm looking for. A lot of applications, huge amounts. So they have to sift through them. They go through it very carefully. There's a process where every single applicant has a personal meeting with Rav Eli Melech, who's the vice principal. I guess he's the vice Rosh Yeshiva, I think he is. And he meets every single one of them, and he, with his team, decides which ones he feels would benefit the most from the school and would actually rise to the challenge. So if he sees potential in the child, that's the one, that's how he accepts them. That's the process. It's not like if someone has money, it's irrelevant. It's irrelevant on their background. It's irrelevant if a child has been thrown out of every school, that's not a reason not to take him. There is no reason not to take him. They'll accept anyone based on their merit and their potential, basically the potential they see in the child.
That's unbelievable. So before we get into...
I was just going to say the reason for that is also because, we have funding coming from donors from overseas, and a lot of funding coming from donors. And it's really important to us to, you know, the money that they send is going to be utilized appropriately and for someone who's actually going to rise to the challenge. So,
right. So before we get into like more the philosophy of how they do it and how do you sort of transform a child, let's go to the end of it. What does the school consider a success story? So how do you see when a child comes in year 7 and leaves in year 12 or whatever it is in Israel, exactly how it works there? What's a success? And maybe if after you sort of commented that, if my father can sort of expound on that and sort of more from maybe a Torah point of view, what is a successful educational outcome?
Okay, so firstly, I just want to explain the school goes from year 7 to 12, and then there's Bagrut, HSC. And then we also have a College of Applied Engineering, which is an integral part of the school. And the kids who get accepted into that, there's about 130 kids that get accepted into that. I'm not sure of the numbers, but anyway, kids who want to go on and do that, that was set up in conjunction with the IDF. So they get trained to do specific roles within what they'll be using when they do their army service. So the success, why I'm mentioning that is that because there can be another 2 or 4 years post HSC to go into this course, bachelor degree or diploma. So what's a success? Now, we give our kids the tools to become whatever they want to be. So we have graduates who are doctors, lawyers, judges, head of startup companies, generals in the army, brigadier generals. I mean, we've got like the whole gamut of people across the board, and they're high achievers. But it's not only that. I think that we look at the whole child. And for us, it's not just about the education, which is very important, the Torah education as well as the secular education. But instilling in them values, and particularly Torah values, is highly critical. So for us, the biggest level measure of success is that that they become mentors and they give back to society. That's very important to us, which they generally do. But that they're decent human beings and they pull themselves out of their family situation and go on to give back to other people in society.
I think that's unbelievable. Tab, do you think that in schools other than Boys Town, you think academics are too emphasized?
Well, I don't know about that, but I'm just listening to Ilana, and something comes to mind, which I'm going to throw in, if that's okay. I'm sure we're going to hear more about the educational philosophy and the sort of the process and how it all works and what the method is. But I would imagine, and correct me if I'm wrong, that before any method, I think the success comes from the very first interview. I think what you described before is about, you said the word potential. And what I'm hearing, at least as someone has a background in education, is that you're not worried about, I mean, if you don't have the resources to deal with what their problem is, like substance abuse, I get that, that's of course. But apart from that, you said you don't mind if they had a criminal record, if they've thrown out of 16 schools, it doesn't matter to you because what I'm hearing is that you have a belief in the potential of the student. And yeah. I think that's probably everything. I mean, it's not everything. Obviously, I have to do something about that. But I'm reminded of an unbelievable thing. I mean, I think we need to learn from God. You know, in the morning we get up and we say, there's the prayer we say in the morning called Modeh Ani Lefanecha, where we thank God for giving back our soul, right? Shechzarti b'nishmati, that you return my soul. And we end that sentence with two words. Two words in our sentence is Rabba Emunatecha, which literally means great is your faithfulness. Which most people understand to mean great is the faith that we have in God. But of course, the grammar is problematic if we understand it that way, because it should say Rabba Emunatenu, that great is our faith, right? And some of the commentaries explain that actually means something different. It means that when we wake up in the morning, we thank God for giving back our soul. We say to God, we realize and we acknowledge, Rabba emunatecha, great is your faith in us. When God gives us another day, it's because he believes in us. Now, it could be a day that we wake up that we've messed up for the last 6 weeks. And God still gets us up every the next morning because he believes. He believes that we can do it. And I think it's probably something that most schools need to learn from. I'm not sure exactly what Boys Town Secret is, but just the fact of believing in someone and believing in a child, we know this. I mean, there's research on it. There was a famous research study where two teachers were given mixed up reports. And I'm not sure if everyone's familiar with this, where there was a class that was had low grades or weren't successful, and the other class was very successful, and they gave the wrong report to the two teachers. And the teacher who got very weak students thought she or he was getting amazing students and therefore taught them that way. And they succeeded, right? Because the teacher believed in them. So it's amazing. It's just an inspiring thing just already to hear that you're taking children and you're just believing in their potential and you're taking it from there, which I'm sure is the foundation of success.
Absolutely. I mean, I have to say, I think the most critical thing is the staff. I work with the most incredible people. The teachers, not just the teachers, it's every single person who is working there, regardless, even if they're, you know, the admin department, it doesn't matter. But particularly the teachers, to see them around the kids, they literally treat them like their children. They genuinely love them. And you can just see this Rav Eli Melech, the Vice Rosh Yeshiva, he speaks at every bar mitzvah, and every single bar mitzvah that he speaks at, it's in Hebrew, so I don't always understand every single word, but, you know, get the gist of it. But it's always very different. He gives a different message to every single child based on that child's, what that child needs, and that he clearly knows every single child. And we're talking about year seven kids, so they're literally just coming in. It's their first year there. But he believes in them, and he's not the only one, but he's just an example. It comes from the top. He believes in them, and they know that he believes in them. They know that all the teachers believe in them. And that's the alumni, when you ask them, you know, what was your success? They say the school. You know, it was the years I spent at the school that the teachers, every single teacher believed in me and pushed me, encouraged me. It's, you know, it's incredible. That's the key thing, is the staff, for sure.
It is incredible. Someone put a question here. Do the boy, and just I'll throw it in here. Do the boys live there? And I just want to add, what happened during COVID? So did the boys continue to live there, and what was the situation then?
Okay, so every boy from the age of 14, Boys Town, I have to say, is unique in Israel. There isn't a school like it anywhere in Israel. It's a government-funded school. It's a government school, public school, so we get government funding. But it is a Dati Leumi, a modern Orthodox school run along modern Orthodox lines. So that's why the government has a say as to how many kids can go there as well. And because of that, why I say this also is because every single boy, it is a boarding school, but only from the age of 14. Every single boy from the age of 14, regardless of their circumstances, is allocated a bed on campus, whether he uses it or not. We're not allowed to legally give, because of the situation, we're not allowed to legally give any child under 14 a bed. They're not allowed to stay on campus. Under extreme circumstances, and unfortunately we do have extreme circumstances, where the kids do need to be taken out of the home under the age of 14, and we have to get special permission for those kids, or we have to arrange for them to go somewhere else, into a foster home, I guess. But every single boy has a bed from the age of 14. How many of them stay there on campus during the year? Before COVID was about 500, I'd say, about half of them. And it varies, because you've got kids who, when it comes to exam time, they might have a house full of younger siblings and it's a difficult situation at home, so they're better off on campus. So when it comes to exam time, a lot more kids are on campus living than they are during the term. Then we have also before COVID, there was probably about 300 who lived full-time on campus year-round, 365 days a year, or the entire school term. At the moment, I can't tell you the exact numbers because I really don't know. During COVID, at the beginning of COVID, when would it have been? It would have been about June last year, maybe a bit later, because we all went in to be do it in June, because someone it sort of reached the school. So we all were into
isolation.
And so the kids, the government closed the boarding school. We actually were not allowed to, the boys were not allowed to stay on campus, which was problematic because we have kids who don't have, that's their home. They do not have anywhere else to go. So we had to find them alternate accommodation. There were boys that were put into an apartment building. But unfortunately with that, they didn't get food. We provide food for whether they're living on campus or not. There's three meals a day. So these kids, because our kitchens were closed as well as the campus, the boys that were put into an apartment didn't have food, and the staff found out. I mean, the staff were in touch with them anyway. So the staff were literally cooking food and taking it to them. And the other kids we found, the younger kids, it wasn't just the school, but it was also social workers, because a lot of these kids are under the social services anyway, the government social welfare services. So homes were found for the younger boys where they could, but there were kids, as I said, who didn't have, and the vast majority had to go back to their homes, to very bad situations. And that was very traumatic for the staff, obviously for the kids, it was terrible, but the staff were actually literally going, taking food and visiting them and on the phone with the kids all the time, daily, to make sure that they were okay. When it came to lockdown and you couldn't go into someone's home, the staff would go to the social workers would go to the homes of the especially the very needy ones, and literally stand outside and talk to the kids on the phone. But the problem was that the parents are inside and the kids are home with a phone, or they can't talk freely in front of their parents. So it was very, very difficult situation.
Wow.
Very difficult situation.
So going back to sort of the more general idea, I'd love to hear sort of the philosophy of education and how they do it. But included in that as well, obviously, any type of education needs an element of discipline as well. And especially, I guess, if you're talking about kids who come with, you know, sort of with baggage, with history of problems, things like that. I mean, does violence ever break out? How did the staff deal with that? Because together with believing in a child, you also have to discipline them. How do they discipline them in a way that doesn't undermine the fact that they believe in them? So how does that all go together?
Okay, so first of all, there's a guy, Rav Yoram. He is the head of discipline as well as the vice principal. He's a short little guy. I wish I had a photo of him, but I don't. He's a tiny little guy, and he's like 5'4" or something, and he's about 55 kilos, if that even. And he walks into a room. He's actually an alumni of the school, so he gets the kids. He walks into the school, into the classroom, into a rowdy classroom, and you can hear a pin drop. I have spoken to staff members who say they have never, ever, ever heard him raise his voice. He just has this look about him that they just straight away that stop whatever they're doing. Obviously there are times, boys will be boys, so there is rowdiness, and there can be times when they, there can be, I don't know how, I don't know personally of any violent situations, but I'm sure there has been. They're extremely rare from what I'm told. You know, so they deal with it. They have to, you know, obviously the staff deals with it. And if it means also it's for some reason expelling a child, that's also extremely rare, they will have to do that. But there's a way they do that. But it's all done in love. The kids know that the staff genuinely love them. And even when they get in trouble, they know the staff is there for them no matter what. And I think that that's a critical thing, that yes, there has to be discipline, but they know that they're doing it out of love. They're not doing it because for any other reason, and it's for their benefit. They also know it's for their benefit.
So you mentioned sometimes they have to expel a child. So does that ever happen? And what happens if that does happen?
Okay. So it has happened. I don't know how many times. And when it does happen, on the very rare occasion as well, the child knows that the school has made arrangements for them at alternative arrangements for them, whether it's at a at-risk facility or, you know, organisation or another school, whatever. But the school makes sure that the child has somewhere to go. They don't just let them go.
I can just jump in there. That's, again, I don't, probably it shouldn't be unique to Boys Town, but I mean, just it's interesting because there's a halachic discussion generally, not only about this kind of school, but all schools, about the concept of expelling a child, right? And the consensus normally around the halachic authorities is about the principle of Yachid v'Rabim, which means an individual versus a community, right? So the only time when it's permissible really to expel a child is if that child is ruining it for the rest of the children. In other words, if a child has their own individual problems, but it doesn't undermine the ability for other children to keep learning, then the school really needs to deal with it. In other words, they can't just expel a child, right? Because expelling a child is considered, as we know, considered extremely damaging for the future of that child. So what you said about making arrangements, that reminds me of a story of the Chazon Ish. The Chazon Ish was a great sage who lived around the beginning of the establishment of the state of Israel, lived in Bnei Brak. And he was a very Haredi rabbi. He was very, very against expelling children. And once one of his students came to him and said, look, I've got a child that I just can't, he's ruining the school. It's impossible. Like, I don't know what to do. There's no other option. We need to. And after a few times coming back to the Chazon Ish, Chazon Ish agreed. He said, okay, I'll let you expel the child, but on one condition. Things weren't as structured, as organized as they are today, perhaps. The one condition is that you personally, individually, make a time a few times a week to learn with that child on a one-to-one basis. Because the only heter, so to speak, the only reason you can expel a child is for the benefit of the school. But there's still a community collective responsibility for that particular child. So what you're saying is actually quite phenomenal, that even though in the rare occasion that Boys Town will expel a child, it comes with ensuring that the welfare of that child is still cared for and still worried about and what's going to be his future. So that's very in line with this with this idea.
Yeah, I mean, as I said, I don't know. I actually have been told of one case, but it involved other students. It's not a personal, obviously, the kids all come with baggage. They all have issues. So, you know, they're not going to, if it's a personal issue, we deal with that. We have to deal with that. That's what we're there for. So there's, you know, we're the only school that has social workers on campus and counsellors. And so we give them more, you know, if there's a situation, they get more counselling. We have kids that are seeing the counsellor every single day, as well as social services outside of school. There's intense, help from all levels, and the staff are on top of absolutely every single child. They know intimately what's going on in that child's life. That was the problem with Corona. Because they were out of sight, nobody knew what was going on with them to that intimately as they had when they're on campus.
So I mean, you're talking about like 1,000 kids. I mean, this is like a huge operation. Huge.
Yeah, it's massive. Yeah.
What's the ratio of staff? I mean,
There's about 150 staff. I don't know how many of them are teachers. There's about 150 paid staff. Yeah.
So that's a lot. I mean, that's a lot on, it's not, if you, I mean, relatively speaking,
not really,
that's
not many. No, I mean, they told me that's a lot. And I said, no, it's not. Not in Australia. Look, I mean, you know, look, they have 30 kids in a class and they don't blink. You know, in Australia, you wouldn't get away with that.
Okay. So you mentioned it's a modern Orthodox school, which means it's a religious school. I assume that the kids don't all come from religious homes. Is there sort of rules? Do the kids have to keep Shabbat on campus? How do you enforce those rules? You impose religion on them is what I'm asking, I guess.
Okay. So It's a Torah school, so they have Gemara, Mishnah, the whole gamut of Jewish studies. That's compulsory because it's a dual curriculum. So they have to do that. There is davening three times a day. They have to wear a kippah on campus, no matter, while they're on campus, they have to wear the kippah. I should just say that you're right, not all the kids are religious. They come from absolutely all, the whole gamut of Israeli society is reflected in Boys Town. So you have kids who would not wear a kippah at all. They come from I wouldn't say a completely irreligious background, because those sorts of kids probably wouldn't fit in. And the parents wouldn't want to send them to a school like Boys Town anyway. So generally, most of the kids, I would say, who aren't religious have one parent that is religious and one parent that's not. And that means that their parents are divorced. As I said, most of the kids have come from divorced homes. So they might have one parent that's religious and one parent that's not. And then you have kids with peyot literally down to their elbows. It's like you've got different, a whole range of kippot, whatever you have. So they have to wear the kippah on campus, but you'll see kids as soon as they step out of campus, as soon as they step outside the gate, the kippah's off their head. In terms of davening, as I said, they've got three times a day they have to daven. There is no enforcement for the davening. The kids have the feeling is that the kids have enough to deal with without forcing them to do anything. So while they do have to wear a kippah, they do not have to, they don't necessarily have, they're not forced to go to daven. If they live on campus, they have to respect the rules. So they might not keep Shabbat, but while they're on campus, they have to keep Shabbat. So, and they do, that's what, you know, they're on campus, they don't turn on TVs or anything like that. They can't.
Have you found that all people, I mean, besides for coming out more of a mensch, sort of more of a functioning human being, do you find people becoming more religious, or that's not a...
I actually don't know. I'd have to ask that question. Yeah. I really don't know. Yeah.
So you mentioned parents, and I think anyone who's ever worked in a school knows that parents are probably the hardest part of any school's job. But it sounds like over here that's especially true. How do you deal with parents? Do you ever have to go against parents' wishes? How do you deal with that? How do you deal with the complications that come from them?
Okay, so being the school that we are and with the demographics that we have, I think it's probably a little easier because the parents know that if they cause any trouble, their kids can be, certainly if they're abusive, their kids will be taken away from them. Their kids will be put full-time onto campus. So we don't have issues that other schools in Australia have in that regard. The parents, I see parents on campus all the time. They come in and we've got this one lady who deals with, she's the face-to-face with the parents. The kids actually call her Ima Rachel. She's literally their mother. For some of them, they don't have a mother. She's the closest thing I'll ever have. And her office is just round the corner from mine. And she's always got kids in there every morning throughout the day until she leaves. Kids are just hanging there. It's amazing. And first, the parents...
The first name after Rachel?
Sorry? Her name's Rachel.
No, just because that's crazy, because we have... I mean,
no, her...
Rachel is called the mother of the Jewish people.
Anyway. Yeah. Her name is Rachel, but they call her Ima Rachel because they call her mother, and you know, she's their go-to person. So the parents actually, it's a go-to person for the parents as well. So the parents, she's on the phone all the time dealing with parents, and they come in. I mean, I've seen her with parents. I've seen her. She brings them down to the dining room at lunchtime. If there's anyone there with her, she'll bring them down with her at lunchtime to eat. But Rav Yehuda, who's the principal of the junior high, secular principal, He is on the phone with the parents every night until past midnight. They all have his WhatsApp number and they're on the phone with him all the time. I think that, look, you know, the other thing is also the parents, it's not the same situation as Australia. And I've had experience in Australia, vast experience in Australia, as Rabbi knows. it's a different thing because also we've got a lot of kids, we've got a lot of Ethiopian kids. The parents don't understand education. They love their kids, but they don't understand the educational side of things. So they send their kids to the school and they're happy for the school to take over and deal with those issues. And the others are, you know, they've got so many issues. A lot of them just, you know, it's not like they come in and they're violent or angry. And if there were, and possibly there has been in the past, the security guard at the front on all entrances and they, you know, they wouldn't let them in, I guess. There isn't that sort of issue from what I understand. But the parents aren't as involved as Australian Jewish parents, that's for sure. There isn't that, not to the same extent, no way.
That's very interesting. Someone asked me, what proportion of the boys are referred to BTJ from social services? I guess sort of to expand on that question, how do most kids actually land at the school? Like the parents choose it, the government forces them to send, how does that work?
Okay, so generally they're referred to us or their families. There's also a lot of repeat families, but generally it's social services or, you know, the welfare, wherever they've been referred to us from elsewhere. I guess there must be people who hear about us and come independently, but most would come through social services, I think.
I was going to ask this question, but someone asked in the chat as well. Is there a girls' town school in Jerusalem? And if not, why not?
Okay, so there actually is. In fact, when Rabbi Alexander Lynchner came to in 1948 to Israel to set up a boys' school, boys' town, another rabbi, and I'm not sure his name, there were two rabbis that were sent from America. One was dispatched to set up a boys' school and one was dispatched to set up a girls' school. There is no connection between the two schools. We're not sister schools or brother schools, whatever, you're not connected at all. I have seen it. I've passed it on the highway. I don't know much about it. I've sort of explored because I do get that question a lot. But they have a very different philosophy and they went on a very different path to what Boys Town went on. But there is a Girls Town school.
So I wanted to delve a little bit deeper sort of to hear your comments on this. So obviously kids show up with a lot of baggage, as you say. I'm sure a lot of them, as you, you know, a lot of them come from very disadvantaged backgrounds. How do you, and what is the philosophy to change that direction? Because I think a lot of times people come, and almost rightfully so, sort of almost like with a victim mentality. It's like their circumstances are very, very bad. How do you pull them out of that? How do you change the generational cycle?
Yeah. Okay. Well, it's. I'll give you an example. There's one boy who a couple of years ago, I think he just graduated now. When he came to Boys Town in his younger years, when year seven or whatever, he was completely disinterested. He didn't want to be there. He's not unusual. You know, some of them want to drop out. It's hard. The work is hard. You know, they can't just skip school and they have work to do and there's a lot of work and a lot of them are far behind as well. And he just was very disinterested. And he reached a point where he had to have to do volunteer hours and when they get higher up in the year 9 or 10 or something, they have to do 30 hours a week. And he ended up volunteering for the police. And he logged in 300 hours in that year, one year, in that first year, because he just loved it. And he suddenly realised, he said, you know, it occurred to me that, you know, I really want to make something of my life and I need an education to do that. And I can't do that without the education. And he knuckled down, ended up duxing the year and, you know, just really excelling. And that's not a one-off story. That is very common. the staff believe in them and show them and they help them. So I think they just, they realize that if they want to pull themselves out of their situation, we're being given all the skills and all the tools to do that. And we have to take that and run. And they do. We've actually got, there's one boy who in year eight, he just finished year eight because the year's finished. He's doing English lessons, private English lessons, actually with a fellow Australian, Ole, who wanted to come and help at Boys Town. So he wanted to help tutor. So I set him up with this one year eight boy. And another, there was another year eight boy who was thinking of doing it, and he went to the class with him to the lesson. And the second boy wasn't all that interested in, after, you know, he was there one lesson, he was mucking around a little bit. And his year eight, the first boy turned to his friend and said, "Do you want to have a good job and a good future? You need to have English if you're going to have, if you're going to make something of yourself." This is a year eight boy. Like, how old are they? 14 years old. He said, "You need to have English. So you need to learn. And it's really important to sit down and listen to this. This man's come in and help us. And you have to sit down and really try your hardest." And that's, I just thought that was incredible for a 14-year-old boy to be so mature, to realise that this is, you know, he really needs to knuckle down, and he's telling his friend, you've got to, you know, these are the advantages that we're being given, and we've got to utilise them.
Incredible.
And that's generally what the alumni, when we ask them after, you know, what made you six, they all say the same thing. They all say the staff. And they believed in me, and I was given these opportunities. And I know donors were paying for my education, and it was only right for me to rise to the challenge because of that.
Sorry, Lana. I mean, it sounds like an incredible culture, and like you said before, it comes from the top. Who actually is the head? Who runs the whole thing?
Okay, so the dean of the Boys Town Jerusalem is Rabbi Lynchner. He's the son of Rabbi Alexander Lynchner, Moshe Lynchner. And his son is the deputy dean, I suppose. What's he called? The dean of students, Rabbi Meir Lynchner. So he's there on a daily basis. Rabbi Moshe Lynchner doesn't come in very often, actually. But then you've got all the levels down, the head of the Rabbi Elimelech, and, you know, who's the, as I said, the head of the Rosh Yeshiva, and all of them are the same. They all have the same philosophy.
We have a couple of questions on the chat. I'll just read it. Yeah. Israel is a melting pot of Jews. So is there racism experience there between the different communities? I guess the question is about Boys Town, not about Israel in general.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you have people coming from, sort of to extend the question, if kids come from different backgrounds, how's the friendship between the kids? How do they get along? Is there problems of...
I'm not sure of any. No, I don't believe there is. I could be wrong. There might be isolated incidents, but I really do not. I mean, you see these kids sitting together. A lot of them, they walk around with their arms around each other. And, you know, you can have a boy with a big kippah and peyote down to here. And then you got another kid with his little, you know, his token kippah on his head. And they're, you know, arms around each other. So, yeah.
And someone's asked the question here, do the staff invite the boys for Shabbat or Chag to their home so they can see how a functional home is run?
Okay, absolutely. In fact, actually, the dorm parents are dorm families. So the kids aren't left on their own in the dorms. There's, there's the dorm room, and then they have to, like at the moment, for example, there's no, the kitchen's been closed for the summer just this week. And so the kids are being fed by the dorm families. So you've got staff members with their entire families live on campus, and they are the dorm parents. So the kids see a functioning family life, mother, father, and children. and they become part of that. And not only they're invited, they go there for meals, etc. Rachel, who I mentioned before, Ravi, all the staff have the kids around to their place all the time.
And does that connection continue, like after they graduate? Like, do they, when they build their own families, do they keep that connection with the staff?
I don't know. Actually, I can't answer that. I really haven't got a clue. I would imagine some there are. There must be some who are very close. I know I've seen some of the boys come back. Certainly the soldiers come back, because they come back on Yom HaZikaron. They're all soldiers, because 100% of them go to the army. So they all come back for Yom HaZikaron, and you just see the interaction with the staff is just like they're hugging, and it's amazing. It's for long lost family.
Wow. Can you maybe share one or two sort of stories that stand out, something that comes to mind, of something of sort of
good or bad? What do you want, a sad one or a good one? I can, yeah.
You can be both. A good one.
Okay, I'll give you a good one. Okay, so actually we just had, just this year, Yom Ha'atzma'ut. There's an alumni of ours. He just graduated. He's been in the army a year. He won the Hayal Mitzdayen for Yom Independence Day Exemplary Soldier. He won that in the whole country. He's an Ethiopian boy who came here as a, how old was he? A 17-year-old. So, and he came to our College of Applied Engineering. And he couldn't even speak a word of Hebrew. He came from an extremely poor family, and his father's a janitor, and his mother hasn't got a job. And he's got a lot of younger siblings, and he won this amazing award, and he's in this incredible unit and doing really well. And he's going to become a career officer in the officer in the army, and that's what he wants to do and give back to. He says, I have to give back to my country. You know, they've given me so much. That was one really good one. We've got one who is a Maro Gete, who also came from Ethiopia, although that was a number of years ago. He actually was, a couple of years ago, he came in to give chizuk, to give translation of chizuk, to the boys, that, because the Ethiopian boys tend to have a negative view of the IDF and the army service. So he came in to tell them they have to work really hard and they have to go to the army. It's really important, and talk to them about what he's done. He's actually a physician in physician in Shaarei Tzedek Hospital, one of the top hospitals, certainly the top hospital in Jerusalem, and done extremely well for himself. And so, you know, he's come back and spoken to the kids on that. So there's some positive ones for you and some difficult ones. So we've got this one boy at the moment who during COVID, his mother left his, just before COVID, his mother took the two younger siblings and left her husband and left the son, this boy as well. We'll call him Gabriel. That's not his name, that's just a fake name. But anyway, he got left behind with his father, who was, who's been depressed. And the boy has been, it wasn't before lockdown, the boy wasn't coming to school because the father, he just wasn't waking up because the father was just depressed and just ignored the child. The child was left starving. And then the school found out about it and had to bring him onto campus. But unfortunately, you know, then we had to find alternative accommodation for him when COVID hit. So that's been a difficult situation. There's a lot of those sorts of stories.
Yeah, it's incredible. So if anyone else has any questions, please feel free to ask. I guess I'll ask just one more question here. What's your involvement in Boys Town, number one? And number two, I guess when you're here already, how is this funded and what could everyone here do to help?
Okay, so my involvement is I am the Australia desk. So I do the Australia. We don't have an office in Australia. We do have a board in Australia with a bunch of amazing people: David Selick, Suzanne Rutland, Stephen Wine, Chloe Wine, Rabbi Aaron Groner, and Sam Roberts. But we don't actually have a physical office because we're trying to save. We want as much of the funds to come to Israel as we can. So I do it from here. I do PR marketing and fundraising. And so what else did you ask me?
How's the whole thing funded?
Oh, so how's it funded? Okay, so because it's a public school, we get money from the government, but we rely on, we still have to raise about 7 million or 5 million. $5 million US. A year to cover the costs. The government pays for the school day from 8:30 to 1, the actual schooling. They do not pay for any extra. So we have counsellors and we have extracurricular activities, including dog training, Arabic, because the kids need to, you know, these are all important things, Thai boxing, all things to help them with their self-esteem and what will help them live in Israeli society. That has to come from fundraising, as well as the rest of the day, the food. I mean, we have three meals a day, so that's $3,000 a day. 3,000 meals we pay a day, we make a day for the kids. The boarding is all on us, so that's all we have to fundraise for that. Unfortunately, with COVID, most of our funds come from America. They've been fundraising this for the last 73 years, since 1948, and the UK and Canada. The US, unfortunately, due to COVID, has taken a bit of a hit. So that's why we're sort of branching out. And the parents do pay, well, up until now, the parents do pay nominal fees, but COVID's sort of hit that as well, and the parents, very few of them are actually maybe
much from parents. I mean, it's
yeah, there was minimal before, but now there's literally, they were literally phoning and saying, we can't even put food on our table. I mean, literally, they couldn't put food on. We had kids that were starving. I mean, we had one mother who came to Mora Rachel and said to her, I'm worried about one boy in my son's class. Every time he comes to me, he's famished. So Rachel actually went to this boy's house and saw the fridge was empty. The kid had actually lost weight. He was literally starving. So
someone's interested in understanding what's dog training. What does that mean?
They bring dogs in once a week, and the kids get to train the dogs so they can, you know, learn about love and caring for something, learn that aspect.
So don't be shy and share with everyone here, if anyone wants to donate to this incredible organization, how should they go about doing that?
Okay, so we have tax deductibility in Australia. We have got that in 2017, so it's Australian tax deductible. We're looking for any funds. We're very happy to receive, obviously. The boys are, you know, every single cent goes, as I said, it doesn't go on administration costs. It all goes to the boys for whatever they need. Our main thing, obviously, is scholarships, because we try and keep the kids on. But anyone who wants to know more about the details, we have a website, btj.org.au. And they can contact me directly. I have an Australian WhatsApp number. I'm using my old Australian telephone number. I have a Skype telephone as well. And I have an email, ilana@btj.org.au. I think that's what it is. we can arrange that. And happy to share, you know, to speak to anybody, Zoom, or speak to someone. The idea was that I was actually supposed to come to Australia to speak to people, but clearly that's not going to happen for a while, unfortunately.
So it's really good to
Please
see
God
you.
Please God, one day.
Maybe can I just end up with a thought?
Yeah, for sure.
Sorry?
Go on, finish what you were saying.
I didn't miss it. I was finished, yeah.
We're winding down. I just want to say that first of all, it's really good to see you because
it's great to see you.
We have been a really
miss you guys. Yeah, we miss you too. We miss Bina. We miss our rabbi.
But it's actually been incredibly inspiring, I have to say. And I want to mention. Besides being fascinating and informative and just inspiring, you know, the Baal Shem Tov always said that everything you hear and observe, you have to learn a lesson. And I think there's such a lesson to be learned in things that you've shared, because you know, often just in the general society we wait till things get really bad until we really respond, right? And I mean, what you're doing is just incredible work, but I think we all need to learn a lesson. We're all parents or grandparents or teachers or know people, and it's just about, I think, taking away the inspiration that people that we have to do with, especially younger people, just to really believe in them and to give them love and to give them confidence and to assist them and support them to bring out their potential. I think we can all do that. It's wonderful to hear a structured organization. It's incredible. But I think the lesson we can all learn is that we all have a part to play in this concept, besides helping you. But I'm saying is that we all have a part to play. We can all do it to someone, especially now during COVID. We can always strengthen someone that's down. We can always lift someone up, and especially a younger person. We can always tell them and let them know that we believe in them and show them that they can do that.
I just want to add one last thing, which I should have mentioned also, that, you know, I said, you know, they go on to help, but as I said, all our boys go on to the IDF, and the College of Applied Engineering, they're actually trained to go into specific units in the thing. All our boys are on, if you go to any base in the country, Air Force Base, you will find Boys Town graduates. The Iron Dome, this is what College of Applied Engineering, we have a room, the College of Applied Engineering is actually set up so to train these boys for Iron Dome. That's exactly what they're doing, what they're trained for. So our boys are literally out there on the front line. They're the ones who are coming up with the technology, security technology, to keep Israelis safe, but not just Israelis, they're also keeping the rest of the world safe. There was about 4 years ago, there was a Etihad flight going to Dubai from Sydney. And it was the unit 8200 that tipped off the Australian government, the Australian police rather, and ASIO, that there was a bomb on that, there was going to be a bomb on that flight. And they averted that threat. And that unit is comprised of Boys Town kids. So they're not only protecting us here in Israel, they're protecting all of you in Australia and Jews everywhere. And this is the success that Boys Town has, that, you know, that they're protecting all of us. So it's really important that this place exists, really important this place exists.
Absolutely incredible. That's amazing. Thank you so much, Ilana, for joining us and for giving us of your time.
Thank you. Thanks for giving me the opportunity. And it's just been wonderful to see you all. It really has.
Great to see you.
So special for me.
If anyone wants to go and check out their website and donate, of course, please do that. If anyone wants to know more about Bina, I'm sure there's some new people there who have never joined a Bina thing. You can message me. My number is 0411-837-013. We're doing many other schmoozes, classes, lectures on Zoom throughout this lockdown. So please join us. And it's great to see all of you, and stay safe and stay well and have a wonderful night. Thank you so much.
Thanks. Everyone. Thank you.
Thank you, Laura. Thank you so much.
Pleasure. Thank you.
Have a good day, everyone. All the best. Bye-bye.